sit at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Privacy.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Cartagena.
Solidarity.
Fill in the border.
I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sastel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 341. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and joining me today is Crystal Giesbrecht. Welcome, Crystal.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Well, you know, we've got a really important subject coming up that we want to talk about, and it's International Women's Day. And what day is that going to happen?
International Women's Day is March 8th, which is actually tomorrow, which is Saturday. But being that today is a Friday, people are sort of celebrating International Women's Day today as well. While everyone's at work, there's a lot of International Women's Day stuff going on kind of all weekend, I guess.
Okay, so what sort of stuff is in store?
Well, International Women's Day, it's kind of a day where different things happen all over the world. And what's interesting about it is it started in the early 1900s. And International Women's Day started as kind of a way to bring awareness to women's issues and also celebrate women's equality and good things that women had done. And now International Women's Day is actually an official holiday, like a statutory holiday, in 27 countries. So not here in Canada, unfortunately. We are working today. But it's really interesting to see all the places that do celebrate today as a holiday.
For example?
Some of the places actually where it's a holiday are, I'll tell you all of them. It's
okay.
Afghanistan, Armenia,
okay.
Azerbaijan, Belarus. I won't tell you actually the whole list because there's 27
okay.
of them.
Right.
Actually, it's a holiday in Russia, Uganda, Ukraine, Uzbekistan.
Okay.
So it's quite surprising actually, places that don't have the greatest record for women's equality, but actually a holiday.
It sort of begs the question, do we have any developed countries like Canada, U.S., European countries, like in the Western type?
Yeah, not where it's a holiday, actually.
Okay.
Not Canada, like not any of the countries that are kind of similar to Canada. And also with the countries that do declare it a holiday, I can't tell you what actually, you know, what they do that day, if anything, but you know, kind of the recognition, I think is interesting, because here in Canada, everyone knows that it's International Women's Day, I think, and we do a pretty good job of celebrating and doing activities on this day, but Yeah,
somebody in a mountain village in Afghanistan might not be aware that it's International Women's
Day.
Yeah,
so it's interesting. I'm not sure if they all have a day off work there or not, but yeah.
And I suppose that also begs the question. I'm sure that if you were talking to a child, and they would say, "Well, why do we need an International Women's Day? Like, what's the reason for it?"
Yeah, and I think there's kind of two reasons for International Women's Day. The first reason is to draw awareness to equality and women's rights. And people might wonder, well, this has been in existence since the 1900s. Do we still need it? You know, isn't it equal? Don't women have rights now? And the answer is there's still a lot more work to be done. And in some countries, we're seeing actually a real regression, and rights are being lost, and things are sort of going backwards. So that's why we really need to use this day to draw awareness to things that are happening all over the world. And we can talk in the show about some of those things that have been going on that Amnesty has recognized. And I think the second reason for International Women's Day is to celebrate successes as well. It's a good chance to draw attention to women that have been successful, women that are good leaders and good role models, and it's a chance to celebrate.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as I asked the question, really, it was more of a rhetorical question, because if you watch the news at all, you don't have to ask that question.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been so many current events that tell us there's a lot more work to be done.
I'm an aficionado of Rachel Maddow. I don't know whether you ever watch Rachel Maddow on MSNBC.
I don't watch much TV, but once in a while, and she is great. I do enjoy her.
And she kind of keeps track of some of that stuff. For example, I think there are some states. I think Texas is one of them. But they are making it more and more difficult for women to get proper medical attention for in things involving reproductive requirements, like, for example, an abortion. Let's be upfront right off the bat. And the whole idea of abortion is something none of us like, but there are circumstances under which an abortion is, as far as the woman is concerned, the answer. And what we want to stay away from are the bad old days when a desperate woman would do anything possible to make this abortion happen. And there's where we had our back alley abortions or self-induced harm, that sort of thing. Women would show up at emergency rooms in great distress because of things that they did to try to terminate a pregnancy on their own. And we don't want to go there again, but that seems to be the direction that some people are pushing in some of these states like Texas.
Exactly, and that's happening. It's happening all over the world. We're seeing a real kind of rollback in some of the rights that that women did have, and things are becoming stricter. But yeah, it's important to note, like you said, it's happening in the States. Ireland is similar. Ireland is a country that we consider to be very similar to Canada. But in Ireland, there's actually an absolute total ban on abortions. It does not matter if you're a survivor of sexual assault. It does not matter if your health is in danger, if you will die in childbirth, no abortions. And those are the situations, I think, that as Amnesty we're working on, and we're trying to raise awareness that women should have a right to choose and to get the appropriate medical attention needed.
Yeah, and as a result of the sort of pushing back, there are agencies whose main thrust is proper care for women who are being defunded by governments like our own Canadian government. Planned Parenthood is one. And I'm sure there are others that are having their funds either eliminated or decreased, that type of thing. And these are agencies that are providing very, very important care for women, both here in our own country and in overseas.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And like you say, not only do these rights need to be recognized and programs need to be funded here in Canada, but then on the international level, when Canada sits around the table at the UN, Canada needs to work to promote these rights in other countries as well. So it's not enough that we have these rights that women can access safe legal abortion in Canada, but we need to make sure that women in other countries can access contraceptives, that they can access prenatal care, that they have access to good maternal health. And Canada really needs to step up and make it clear on the world stage that that's something we want to promote worldwide. It's not enough to just make sure we have these rights in our own country. We need to promote it for other women as well.
And I guess that's where Amnesty comes in terms of rights. And my own opinion is that some governments are looking strictly on what appeals to their voter base, what keeps them in power, where they get their votes. And I suspect, my opinion is that they're a little cynical about this. They'll have people in their midst who will actually realize that the agencies that they are removing funds from are actually doing, for the most part, very good work wherever, whether it's in our own country or overseas. But because of the political optics of it, they choose to remove the money.
Mm-hmm.
So our job is to convince them to do otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Letters.
Yeah, exactly. And with this campaign that we're doing, and we should talk in a little more detail about that, but one of the things that Amnesty is really focused on right now is the My Body, My Rights campaign. And like you said, letters are a big part of that. And that whole campaign focuses on individuals' rights to make decisions about sex, sexuality, and reproduction. So with that, we want to urge governments around the world to ensure that everyone is having their rights protected and that governments don't criminalize or control sexual and reproductive rights. So the point is for people to be able to make the choice to be able to access appropriate medical care, appropriate contraception, whatever they choose to do. But there are women who are dying, young children, young girls who are being forced to have babies because of a lack of services. And we just want to make it clear that everyone has a right to access those services, you know, and especially when it's health, and especially when it's life or death.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I said, in Ireland, it doesn't matter what the reason, there's just no abortions.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be a little more, I don't know, smart about that, more compassionate. It just doesn't seem reasonable where you have a situation, and it can be a black and white situation where perhaps the fetus is not viable, the mother's going to be at great danger to give birth, and, you know, these things could be black and white, absolute certainties, and in that situation there's still no possibility of an abortion in Ireland.
I know. That's how it is. And what you just said about it being, you know, it seems like a black and white decision to us. You probably remember this case, and I'm sure lots of Amnesty supporters do, but Beatriz from El Salvador,
mm-hmm.
this was last year.
Right.
And so she was 22 years old and pregnant. She already had a 1-year-old at home. And she had lupus, actually, and she was so ill that they knew she wouldn't be able to carry the baby to term.
Mm-hmm.
And 15 doctors actually recommended a therapeutic abortion. Then what happened was that the fetus turned out to not be viable, and the baby would not have lived. The fetus was dead already.
Right.
And still, the doctors were recommending an abortion, but it's illegal in El Salvador. And they were recommending this. People around the world were writing letters. It was the only way to save her life. if she got the abortion, then she would live and take care of her one-year-old, where if she did not get the abortion, the baby was dead already and she would die too, right? This seems mm-hmm. black and white.
And her other child would be motherless.
Exactly. Like, there was one way to save lives or save no lives at all. And the government just, no, it was just not acceptable. And despite the doctor's recommendations, they weren't saying yes. And it got protested. It went to the Supreme Court. It still did not get approved. And eventually, at the last minute, she did get the abortion and mm-hmm. it saved her life. But it went very late into her pregnancy, which for her health was extremely sure. risky. Like, right. it was a risky pregnancy.
She could easily have died anyway.
She easily could have. And that's why the doctors were recommending her to have the abortion. And it went so late. And I mean, the stress of being pregnant, you have a very small window of time here. And having mm-hmm. to take that to the Supreme Court, it was just really... it was unacceptable. And I mean, thankfully she got the treatment. She recovered. It worked out. But that's one case. And if this happens again in El Salvador or elsewhere, it takes, you know, you don't want it to take the time where we're all writing letters here from Canada and people are signing petitions and it has to go to the Supreme Court because the woman could run out of time. When it's a case of health complications, it can't always be a one-off decision like that. And that's why better policies need to be put in place.
And when you look at this, the huge irony is that the people who are making these decisions about a woman's body are invariably all men.
Yes, it usually is. And that's what's upsetting too, is it's, they won't ever be in that position,
no.
right? Like,
mm-mm.
looking at what's been going on in Morocco. So a rapist can avoid criminal sanctions if he marries his victim. Does the victim get a choice in this? No, she does not. You know, and survivors are sometimes forced to marry that rapist because it preserves the family honor. Now she's not a victim. And, you know, all of this, it's happy ending for everyone except the young girl who's mm-hmm. been a victim. And again, those decisions are made by people who will not ever be in that position, who are not young girls, who are subject to sexual assault or who are subjected to being forced to carry pregnancies to term and all of that. The decisions aren't being made by women, and they're not being made by young women.
And then this goes actually to the larger problem in which women basically don't have the same respect as a man. The situation that pops into my head immediately, Saudi Arabia,
mm-hmm.
women are not allowed to drive.
Yeah.
By law.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's just a sort of an indicator of the status of a woman in Saudi Arabia and probably other Arabic countries. I don't know whether it's almost, you know, a lot of these countries, they don't have the wherewithal anyway to even think about driving a car, but still.
And, you know, if your family owns a car, for women, there's going to be situations where you need to drive it. What if you have a sick child you need to take to the hospital? It's mm-hmm. it's just quite ridiculous that women's freedom is restricted to the point where women are not allowed to have the convenience and, you know, sometimes being able to do really necessary tasks just because they need to have a male relative's eyes on them at all times, you
right.
know. And I don't know if you saw this. It was maybe a year ago or not quite, but there was new legislation in Saudi Arabia actually where women could ride a bicycle accompanied by a male relative. So what are you
right.
going to do? Like, does he go on another bike or do you double him, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But it's not functional. And the women in Saudi Arabia are working very hard, I think, to get that overturned. But yeah, it hasn't been changed yet. And I mean, driving a car is convenient. We know
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
especially being in Canada, we're kind of a culture that drives a lot. But I always think there might be things like getting a child to the hospital. What if your male partner or your male relative needs a ride? You know, there's going to be those situations
mm-hmm.
where it's just not functional, and you get into where the rules really are overriding basic rights, things that should come first. You know,
it kind of reminds me, and this is years and years and years ago, I have some friends in Ontario, and they had a rather large family. And the oldest happened to be a girl. Well, she had she decided she wanted a career in medicine, so they went. They were behind her for a nurse, so she became a nurse, you know. And I guess I think they thought that the son was going to, you know, he was okay to be a doctor, you know, all right. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen anyway. He ended up being in teaching. He didn't have, and I think teaching came. It was one of those things where he roamed around a little bit doing one thing and another, and then decided, gee, I better get serious, you know. So he embarked on a teaching degree, but they couldn't. The main thing was that she wanted to be a doctor, but no, that was not possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you raise a good point that we're not that far away from it here in Canada ourselves, mm-hmm. right? It's only really been recently, too, that women or girls, I should say, girls are being more encouraged to go into sciences mm-hmm. and math and do things like engineering and careers like that, where, you know, even 30, 40 years ago, it was your options were kind of nurse, teacher, mm-hmm. homemaker, mm-hmm. right? And now I think girls are really being encouraged in schools and being able to do more of those things. And that's positive, and that's something to celebrate on International Women's Day. Yeah. But it's not that far really in our history as well. And we're certainly not perfect in terms of equality here either. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, it reminds me, it makes me think of Sylvia Fedoruk, who was a fantastic lieutenant governor here quite a few years ago now. And I always thought she was just a great role model for girls, because she was a nuclear physicist, if I'm not mistaken, which, you know, I don't know how she swung that, mm-hmm. but she was a very determined, very capable woman. And I just thought it was a wonderful place for her to be a lieutenant governor of our province. And you know, just and a very nice person besides.
Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of person that tells young girls that they can be involved, they can get leadership positions, mm-hmm. and they can have a career in the sciences or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But seeing those examples sometimes is what lets girls know it's possible. So that's why it's really a big deal to celebrate some of those people that have made those achievements.
Yeah, fortunately, it's not that rare in Saskatchewan. I can think of, you know, several very, very prominent and accomplished women in various fields, and in business and politics and that sort mm-hmm. of thing. But there are other places that it's not that common.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And I think culturally, areas in which girls are not encouraged, you know, to go in those directions. And the best thing you can do for any child, boy or girl, is to let them know that really they can accomplish whatever they want. You know, they just have to set their sights and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's especially true, and girls, women especially, have to be encouraged to do that, because there are always the naysayers, oh, you don't want to do that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are. And that's why, you know, positive role models in schools and parents and friends, you know, that's really what young girls and boys need, to know that there's options and you can choose and you don't have to just take the socially expected route.
Yeah, for sure. And just about time here to take a break. And Crystal and I had a short discussion about music. And I hadn't thought about it. Crystal hadn't, or I don't know, had you thought about it at all?
I hadn't. And Jim, I said, you know, it's International Women's Day. We need a song by a really, by a female artist. And Jim picked this one. And yeah, we listened to it before the show started, and it is just so awesome. It's such a good song. It's the perfect pick for today.
And, of course, we're going to do our break first. I just about started it while we were talking about it, but I won't do that. We'll have the break first, and then we'll come back, and we're going to listen to Tracy Chapman.
Give me a to stare, and I'll turn right back around. Said I don't want to leave you lonely, you gotta make me change my mind. To call me, give me one reason to steer, and I'll turn right back around. Give me one reason to steer, and I'll turn right back around. And I don't want to leave you lonely, you gotta make me change my mind.
Classic Tracy Chapman. Gotta love her. Yeah, that was Give Me One Reason. And I don't know, we haven't heard too much from Tracy lately, have we? She's still performing? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not too sure either. But, you know, I'd like to find out after we just listened to that song twice today. It's so great. I'm reminded how great she is.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there's another issue there too, because she's a gay woman, you know. So, great. Once again, we got some role models out there, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Absolutely.
So, and she's one of them. Wonderful singer. So I just thought we would have a look at some of the other aspects of, the My Body, My Rights campaign. And, there are various countries where we've got definite, sort of focus areas.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we have Nicaragua, and it's one of those places that has a total abortion ban, and as a result, women's lives and health is endangered, and the medical professionals who, I guess basically they break the law, by caring for their patients.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do is criminalized. And, you know, when you think about it, that's basically the sort of direction that there are places down in the States that are headed down that road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a complete and total ban. Even, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter the age of the victim of assault if they're pregnant. Yeah.
And in this particular occasion, this situation, it's a total ban. And one of the examples they give, even if it is a 10-year-old who has been raped, no possibility of an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So Nicaragua definitely needs to change policy. And the quotation here is, children are being compelled to bear children. Pregnant women are being denied essentials, including life-saving medical care. So this is an official campaign. You know, when we do our letter writing, Amnesty International is urging the Nicaraguan authorities to immediately repeal the law that bans all forms of abortion, guarantee safe and accessible abortion services for rape victims and women whose lives or health would be at risk from the continuation of pregnancy, and protect the freedom of speech of those who speak out against the law and offer comprehensive support to the women and girls affected by the law. So, just one.
Yeah, and if people who are listening are interested in reading more about these cases or getting involved in writing some letters and doing something about it, there are some really good resources available on the Amnesty Canada website, which is amnesty.ca. But there's a toolkit that contains information about My Body, My Rights. It's available on the website, and it's easy to find actually on the search term if you just type My Body, My Rights, or go to the Women's Human Rights section. The toolkit is there, and it's got some more background about all of these. And as well, there's a toolkit that contains petitions for several of these. So it's good to point that out, because that's something that people can do on their own. You can get other people, you can get your friends and neighbors to sign the petition. So that's just some of the way the resources are available. And another one that I wanted to talk about, this is one that we've been writing letters for a while for her, actually. And as part of International Women's Day, we've been sending letters again. And it's a woman named Azza Hilal Ahmad Suleiman, and she is an Egyptian woman. And what happened was, in late 2001, protests broke out in Egypt, and hundreds of thousands of people were expressing their frustration with the interim military government. So Azza and a male friend were leaving a demonstration near Tahrir Square, and they stopped to help a young woman. So a group of soldiers had pulled the woman's clothes down, and they had beaten her badly. And when when protesters tried to intervene and carry the woman away, the soldiers turned their attention to the rescuers. So Azza's friend was shot, and she was knocked to the ground and beaten on the head. And the beating continued even after she lost consciousness. So this attack from the soldiers left her with a fractured skull and memory problems. So the attack on Azza was captured on video, and it was posted online. So, and that's actually available. There is a link to it on the Amnesty website as well. The news report comes from CNN, and you can see it on the Amnesty website. So her family filed a complaint against the army, and she gave her testimony. And a year later, no one has been held accountable for the attack. And they have this on video. They know, you know, it was the soldiers, but nothing has been done. So what we're doing, and we have been writing letters since this came to Amnesty's attention, but we're renewing it again now for International Women's Day. We're writing letters to the armed forces, the head of the armed forces in Egypt, to let them know that there needs to be an investigation into what happened to Azza, and it needs to be, whoever was responsible needs to have a fair trial and be brought to justice. But something needs to be done in this case.
Well, I just find it hard to speak after hearing that kind of brutality. We think we're a civilized world, and boy, the truth is That's not really the case.
It is. And, you know, I think doing this kind of activism and being involved with Amnesty, I think we're so lucky that we get as many good news stories as we do, because so many of these people who've just suffered absolutely horrible atrocities and inhumane treatment that you would think, how does this happen? And it's easy to feel really dismayed about it. But all the letters we write, they don't all get positive results, but a lot of them do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the positive thing, because if you just read all these horrible stories, you could sit there feeling really upset about it. But the thing is, we know we can do something, even here in Canada, right? And and that's what I think makes this kind of work rewarding and saves you from just being dismayed about what's going on in the world.
That's why so many people are still involved in the Stolen Sisters campaign.
Absolutely.
Because change has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't stop until the change does happen.
Exactly. And some of the Amnesty cases we've worked on recently, we've worked on for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them, Hamid Ghassemi Shal was on death row for over 4 years.
In Iran.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And results were seen, but it took a lot of letters and a lot of petitions and a lot of attention. So sometimes we don't get the results right away, but we keep writing until we do. And that's what we'll do with the case of missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada. We will keep writing letters and calling for a national inquiry and calling for some action. And we'll keep writing until we see something.
And that's kind of the essence of Amnesty, you know. We do write these letters, and we keep at it because we know they work. You know?
Absolutely.
It may take a while, but we do see positive results, and something needs to be done. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't turn your back on it. When you read these stories, you think, well, this is terrible. These people should not be allowed to suffer like this. The people responsible for the wrongdoing need to be brought to justice, or at least made to stop doing what they're doing. And this is a way we can do it.
Exactly. You
know? And it doesn't happen overnight, but it does happen. We have, every so often, we've got the good news stories that you're mentioning, and we get them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what encourages us to keep on doing what we're doing.
Exactly. And it's empowering for activists to know that their words are being heard, especially when we send letters to people who are imprisoned, and we send letters not just to the governments asking for justice, but when we send letters to the individuals who are at risk, and we know they get those letters. And when they get freed, they comment that the letters helped them and that they appreciated the support. That's why you keep doing it. And that's what really helps. And, you know, you can read the terrible stories in the news, but then you can do something about it. And that's really empowering. And, you know, speaking of good news, one that's exciting to celebrate, being that it's International Women's Day, is Nazreen. So Nazreen Sotoudeh was in Iran in prison, and she was sentenced in September 2010 to 6 years. And what they charged her with was spreading propaganda against the system. But she was she's a lawyer, and she was working for Women's and Children's Human Rights. And she was put in jail with a bunch of other political activists. And she had she's married. She has a 13-year-old daughter, and activists around the world were trying to get her out. But what was really interesting was someone who was an activist who knew a lot about the situation in Iran said to me that they were really focusing on freeing Nazreen because Nazreen was an activist who would get other women and children to safety, and she would get justice for the others. She would not get out of jail and then go on her merry way. She would keep fighting.
Right.
And that's what happened. Everyone worked, and Nazreen was released along with 11 political activists. But now she's free to keep doing her work. And she won't stop trying to get justice and equality for women and children in Iran. So it's people like her that are really good role models and really good examples, because what she went through being jailed in Iran, but it doesn't make her give up. It doesn't make her give up her activism. She keeps fighting.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I'm kind of speechless here because I just find this so amazing. First of all, that you have people like Nazreen who go right to the wall, basically. You know, they knew, she knew that she was in danger, especially, you know, when she's going against the policies of that particular government in Iran. And she just kept on going.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up there, and then worldwide Amnesty gets her basically out,
mm-hmm.
and then she's right back at it again. So,
yeah.
She has to expect, I'm sure, that they'll apprehend her again.
Mm-hmm. You know? And it could happen. And she's been in a lot of risk, personally, and also on one occasion her husband was detained. And sorry, I said before she had one daughter. She actually has two children. But one of her daughters, they had placed an illegal travel ban so that her daughter couldn't leave the country, which they eventually lifted. But doing activism is hard when you're at personal risk, but when your children are at risk, right? That's obviously must have been incredibly difficult for her, but she hasn't given up. And there's been several people that Amnesty has worked for that were activists who were jailed because they were journalists or lawyers or who were working for other people's rights. But they keep fighting. They get out. And sometimes Amnesty has to help people a second time.
Well, you know who I think of when you mention that is Jenny Williams in Zimbabwe.
Yes.
She's not on our list here right now, but trust me, the fight's not over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Exactly. And she's someone really to be celebrated as well when we're talking about women who've really fought hard for equality and who've been good role models. Jenny Williams from WOZA, they haven't given up despite everything she's been put through. She's still doing her work.
Yeah, I remember meeting her in Montreal, and she had her hair cut short because she was going back. And if you have long hair, that gives them something to grab you by.
And sorry, Jim, where was she going back to?
Zimbabwe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she'd cut her hair while she was in Canada?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she knew that, the fight's not over. She's been fighting for a long time. WOZA has been fighting for a long time. And, of course, it's against the repressive regime of Robert Mugabe, who is still solidly in there. He's over 80 years old now, and I think he's one of those oligarchies that he doesn't intend to die, you know, and he's just going to stay right to the bitter last end. And of course, he has his supporters because they're on the gravy train, you know, and so that regime will stay there. But we continue to write, you know, in terms of the situation in Zimbabwe, as well as many others.
Exactly. And that's another one of those cases where not only do we try and write to the leaders, the people in power in Zimbabwe or the people that are working with Zimbabwe to share how we feel, but you write to the supporters and the activists too to let them know that we're thinking of them here in Canada, because even if that doesn't change the situation, hopefully it supports them and empowers them and lets them know that people around the world care and that we're doing something, we're doing what we can.
Yeah. It's all about making people aware. And that doesn't matter what situation you talk about. You let the people who are in power, I guess we're doing two things. We're letting the people who are in power know that their actions have not gone unnoticed, and that we don't agree with them, and they need to change what they're doing. And I suppose everybody likes to think in the long run that they're the good guys, you know. So they're getting these letters telling them, no, they're not the good guys. They're the bad guys. They're the problem. And eventually you wear them down and they do the right thing.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, one letter maybe doesn't change someone's mind, but some of the cases, for example, that we write for on International Human Rights Day, when everyone around the world writes for the same case, when leaders get letters from all over the world and piles of them and thousands of letters, it kind of says, ooh, we couldn't just slip this one under the radar. People know that we put this person in jail without a fair trial. Everyone around the world knows and everyone's watching you.
Sure.
And that's sometimes where even if, like you said, maybe they don't necessarily want to do the right thing. They might do the right thing
because it's
in the public eye.
Sure.
So it's letting people know that we notice this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the local post office has these bags of mail. They're addressed to a certain place. Okay, they got to deal with them. So they take them to the address,
mm-hmm.
and then they have to deal with them there. They may or may not actually read them,
mm-hmm.
but they're forced. They see this mass of mail.
Mm-hmm. It makes an impact when you get a huge pile of letters all about one individual who maybe you thought that no one would notice.
Yep. And perhaps one that they'd actually forgotten themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when you have so many people, like, consider Evan Prison mm-hmm. in Tehran. I'm sure that the people in power, for the most part, they would not even know who they have incarcerated there.
They wouldn't. And especially some of the situations that have happened in Iran, or things that happened like the protests that Azza was involved with in Egypt, where groups of people get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been times when entire groups have been arrested and detained. But then do they get processed right away? Some of them don't get a trial. Some of them don't get a trial for years. So it's very possible that, you know, your case might not be noticed, especially by the leaders. They just don't always know. So that's why it's the job of activists around the world to bring these things to light.
Well, let's get back to International Women's Day, and I think I've been straying here a little bit. We have such a wide spectrum of things that Amnesty
mm-hmm.
is interested in. It all relates.
But yeah.
So it's we're observing it today. But it's observed on the 8th. It's actually the 8th.
International Women's Day is actually Saturday, tomorrow, March 8th.
Okay. And so we're not alone in celebrating this. This is a worldwide celebration and marking achievements, and also paying attention to places where women don't have the rights they should have.
Exactly.
So apparently, in some of these countries, the tradition sees men honoring their mothers, wives, girlfriends, colleagues, etc., with flowers and small gifts. And in some countries, International Women's Day has the equivalent status of Mother's Day.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Where children give small presents to their mothers and grandmothers.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to see something like that happen here.
I know, it's interesting, and I like that it's the celebration and the honoring, as well as, you know, the awareness raising that we usually do here in Canada, but it's nice that they're using it as a day to honor older
women
as well.
It's a strange kind of dichotomy if you think about it. I mean, in a lot of these countries, women are honored because, obviously, here's an important part of how we exist. You know, you have to have a mother or you're not here,
mm-hmm.
type of thing. And mothers are honored, but they're also restricted. Your
mm-hmm.
mother, that's it.
Yes.
You know, don't have any aspirations beyond being in the family, looking after your male members of your family, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So often there's a role, but it's a very prescribed role, and a role without a lot of, you know, women's role is within that box, and there aren't sometimes opportunities to do other things.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a bit of a challenge for refugees who end up in a developed country like Canada, and they want to maintain some of their cultural practices because they want to keep their identity of where they're from. But some of the things that they're hanging on to just don't fit with our culture.
Mm-hmm. And it can be difficult for people, especially if you're not aware of what Canadian mm-hmm. culture is when you arrive, right? It's a learning curve for people when they come. As well, trying to keep your own culture, but trying to fit in with what's acceptable and what's, you know, appropriate here. And depending from where newcomers are from, but mm-hmm. certainly I think it's challenging for a lot of people.
And I think that's where education is the key. Because I think if you go to university, let's say, and I'm thinking in terms of a male member of a particular culture, you go to university and you sort of have your eyes opened and you start thinking about things that perhaps you never thought about before. And eventually you realize, oh, this really isn't a good practice.
Mm-hmm.
This needs to be changed.
Yeah, and it's like that with anything, is if other options aren't presented to you and you don't see examples of other positive things, you don't know, right?
Yeah.
Like taking it back to our discussion about positive role models and about good examples for youth, you don't know what all the options and opportunities are until they're presented to you. So it's always about education and always about seeing what's out there.
Well, we're getting to the end of our time here, and I haven't mentioned anything about the Look and Listen Lottery.
Ah.
Which is, now we're talking about CJTR, the very station on which we're being heard right this moment. And so let's talk about the CJTR 2014 Look and Listen Lottery. And once again, guess what the grand prize is?
I have no idea what the grand,
well,
grand prize is.
I'm glad I'm bringing this up then, because once again, it's the trip for two to New York City.
Oh, that's a fantastic prize.
Absolutely. And you get a return airfare for two, four-star hotel for three nights. You get Mets or Yankees baseball tickets, tickets for a motor coach tour of Manhattan and tour of Radio City Music Hall. Plus, we're not done yet, $1,000 cash to spend any way you want.
I want to buy a ticket, Jim.
Well, yeah, you're fortunate. We have tickets here, and I'll be pleased to sell you a ticket here when we're off the air. Second prize is a $1,000 travel voucher from Carlson Vaughan Rickert Travel. Third prize is a relaxing getaway. Have you ever been to the spa in Moose Jaw?
I have. It's lovely.
Okay. That is the third prize. It's a relaxing getaway at Moose Jaw's Temple Gardens Mineral Spa. A two-night stay, breakfast and dinner at Harwood's Dining Room, a $100 gaming credit at casinos Regina and Moose Jaw. Now the tickets are only $20 each. And there's only 1,200 tickets available, so the odds of winning are really good. For these three great prizes, you're going to have, well, depending on how many tickets you buy, of course, the more tickets you buy, the better you're I've just thought I'd mention that. The more
statistically,
tickets,
you have better chances.
Yes, there you go.
And is this a fundraiser for CJTR?
It is. It is indeed. We're going to be drawing on May 8th for this fantastic trio of prizes. And you can buy your tickets here at CJTR's office, 1102 8th Avenue. This is during regular business hours, of course. Or by calling the radio station 525-7274. Again, during regular office hours, Monday through Friday. And you can pay by credit card if you wish. And over the phone, and you can order these tickets. We can send them to you if you wish. And if you want to get more information about all this sort of stuff, we have the rules of play at www.cjtr.ca. And as you mentioned, the purpose here is to raise money to support CJTR, which is a community radio station, and basically depending very much on their volunteers. I think we have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100 volunteers who make the station work. We have very few paid employees, so we're operating on a shoestring for sure. And we have some state-of-the-art equipment here, so we need to keep upgrading that equipment and improving the way we do things technically. And so we need the money to keep on going and do the things that you've become accustomed to doing.
And it's so important to support community radio. This is an opportunity where we get to be on the radio talking about human rights. There's all kinds of other shows that you just don't hear on other radio. And this is something that's for the community and staffed by the community. So it's really important to keep it going.
And that's all the time we have. So we're closing this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."